This is SonarCast, the podcast that talks about the recording industry, musicians, technology, and how they affect each other. This is episode 2 for the week of June 18th, 2007. Hello and welcome to SonarCast. I'd especially like to welcome you if you're a first-time listener. And for everyone joining us on iTunes, SonarCast is now available on iTunes, which is great. So if you've subscribed to us on iTunes, thank you very much and welcome to the program. We have got a lot to talk about today. There's never a shortage of stuff to talk about when it comes to the music industry. But before we get into all that, yesterday was Father's Day, and I would just like to wish all the fathers out there a belated Happy Father's Day. Usually, SonarCast is recorded on either Saturday or Sunday. I like to do it on the weekends just because I have enough time to sit down and think about it and go through the material and the stories and highlight what I want to talk about. But being that it was Father's Day, I decided to take the weekend and just kind of, spend some time with my dad and my family, and we had a good time. By the time Sunday evening rolled around, I was just so tired from everything we had done. The program was going to come out like crap if I had decided to record it at that point. And I thought, to you, I owe you the best I can give you. So that meant letting it go one day, recording it Monday morning, and putting it out on Monday, as it usually is, you know, at least by Monday, just a couple hours late. Anyway, again, Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. You guys make a huge influence on your kids and your families. And just want to let you know that I, and I'm sure many others, appreciate it. But enough of this mushy stuff, let's get to the news. Okay, first up, this comes from TechDirt. The MPAA, which is the Motion Picture Association of America, and the RIAA, which is the Recording Industry Association of America, create yet another lobbying group and push for stronger laws, as if they don't have enough pull in government already. Not too long ago, they formed the Copyright Alliance, some of you may remember, and they decided that it would be good to add another lobbying group under their belt. Now they've started this new organization that's called the Coalition Against Counterfeiting and Piracy, and of course, it's being headed up by the RIAA and the MPAA, along with this is the strange part, the National Association of Manufacturers and the Pharmaceuticals Industry. Oh, that is... Boy, talk about strange bedfellows. And as if the pharmaceutical industry doesn't have enough pull in government as it is already. Come on. I really don't understand what the point of this is. I know the one thing they're pushing for here is an intellectual property czar who would work directly with the White House to crack down on intellectual property violations. Wasn't there a drug czar? Like an illegal drug czar, and it was supposed to, you know, crack down on illegal drugs, and it didn't work. So even if this did make sense, it wouldn't work, or at least in my opinion, it wouldn't work. Maybe it would work, I don't know, but I don't believe it would work. And then to kind of pat themselves on the back and vilify what they were doing, they had NBC Universal's general counsel, Rick Cotton, that means NBC Universal's lawyer, for those of you who don't read through the jargon of the industry. This is what he had to say. This is Rick Cotton. Our law enforcement resources are seriously misaligned. If you add up all the various kinds of property crimes in this country, everything from theft to fraud to burglary, bank robbing, all of it, it costs the country $16 billion a year. But intellectual property crime runs to hundreds of billions of dollars a year. That's just absolutely ridiculous, and it's based off of biased studies that the industry has conducted itself. But, I mean, even those studies that I've seen, and TechDirt points this out too, I have yet to see one that says that there were billions of dollars in lost revenue because of this kind of thing, intellectual property crimes. And not only that, but all those reports that you'll read from within the industry always say that every time a file is content is copied, that is equivalent to a lost sale, which just isn't true. How about the free marketing that goes out? How about the extra concert tickets that are sold because someone heard a band that they never liked before? And not only that, but then they'll take that fact that, oh, this was a lost sale because the file was traded, and they say, oh, well, it generates waves, and it just, it multiplies itself. There's an exponential loss in revenue because of this. It's ridiculous and garbage, and it's just not true. Unfortunately, there's not enough voices out there saying that's not true, that is inaccurate. That's just kind of why I'm doing this. I'm hoping maybe my voice will encourage others to get out there and say, no, that's not true, we don't believe it, you're wrong, and go, you know, peddle your wares somewhere else. Wares, it's probably not a good word to bring up during a program like this. Ah. Okay, anyway, next story. Boston University student fights the RIAA attempt to discover names behind IP addresses. This is something we talked about last week. It relates to something we talked about last week, in that the RIAA is trying to force settlements on people that they suspect, and I'm going to say suspect because in some cases it has been proven that the people did not break copyright law. What they will do is try to force a settlement, being that they get the IP address of whatever computer was sharing said file, and then lodge a John Doe lawsuit, which basically means we don't know who this person is, but we want to sue them. And the courts allow it so far. And once that suit has gone through the court, then the internet service provider can be contacted and said this person was found to be in violation of, you know, serving up intellectual property that belongs to us. We need their information. That's usually how it works. And then you get a letter from the RIAA saying, you better settle for around $3,000 or we're going to take you to court and make this even worse. So that's basically how it works. We kind of talked about it last week. Well, there's a student at Boston University who was targeted in a John Doe lawsuit, but now he is fighting to keep the university from revealing his name and others of IP addresses who the RIAA has cited in John Doe lawsuits. So basically, the RIAA has put a lawsuit out there against an IP address, really. That's what it gets down to, an IP address. But what this guy's trying to do, and his name is not mentioned, obviously, because no one knows who he is yet. What this guy's trying to do is keep the university from revealing his name. Now, I don't know what kind of legal precedents there are for this kind of thing, and I'm not sure it's ever been done before. If it works, though, I mean, you know, he could get off scot-free. So, if you're wondering how the RIAA gets those IP addresses, they have a hired gun. The hired gun is Media Sentry. What they do is they'll go on P2P networks and try to find files that belong under the jurisdiction of the RIAA. And once they find them, they record those IP addresses and forward them on to the RIAA. Because, let's face it, the RIAA is not tech-savvy enough to take care of something like this on their own. So they hire Media Sentry. In fact, Media Sentry are the ones that could be in trouble with that lawsuit in Florida, because they apparently hired private investigators, or the private investigators worked for Media Sentry directly to investigate that woman in Florida, and they weren't licensed by the state of Florida, so they're in trouble there too. Beyond that, now this guy is, you know, launching his fight to keep his information from becoming public knowledge to the RIAA. But even if this guy wins, this isn't the end of the story, because it just came out this week that AT&T is said it's going to be doing its part to fight piracy, which means that they might be turning over names and whatever just because they want to. There may not even be, you know, a John Doe lawsuit filed yet. But the RIAA might go to AT&T Broadband and say, yeah, we've seen some suspicious activity here, and we'd like their information to follow up. And AT&T just rolls over and gives it to them. Yeah, neat. Remind me not to sign up for AT&T. But you know what the biggest problem with these John Doe lawsuits is? And Ars Technica pointed out in this article that through the John Doe lawsuit, the RIAA is given, I don't know what else to call it, but an unfair advantage in these proceedings. Usually how a lawsuit works is that someone will, you know, meet with a lawyer. The lawyer will write up what's known as a complaint. That complaint is basically a notification that a party believed it was wrong. It goes through the court, and then an officer of the court, which can be, it depends, it can be a bailiff, it could be a county sheriff, depending on how the jurisdiction is set up. That complaint will be delivered to the, I would say, future defendant at this point, because it's not necessarily going to trial. After the initial complaint is filed, then you go into what's known as the discovery phase. And this is where both the parties of the plaintiff and the parties of the defendant must state everything that they know at this point. A lot of people don't realize that. There's no, you know, ace in the hole necessarily as this stuff works. What it has to be is, you know, this is what we know. These are the facts we have, and we are forwarding this information to you. There might be something that comes up in the middle of the case. That's a different story. But after the discovery phase is over with, then it goes to, you know, then it goes in front of a judge. I was going to say to trial. I guess it's a trial of sorts. Then it goes to the judge, and that is where the case is decided. But in any case, with a John Doe lawsuit such as the RIAA has, they've basically done all their investigation, and there's been no discovery period. So the would-be defendant has a very small window of opportunity to say, whoa, I'm going to go through this information and start, you know, finding the holes in it. They really don't have a chance to do that as you normally would in any type of civil suit. So I hope that helps you understand why this is such a bad idea and why these John Doe lawsuits are just absolute garbage. And really, should I believe they should be done away with. Now, I am not saying that, you know, intellectual property should not be protected. Do not misunderstand me here. I do believe it should be protected. And I do believe that those who violate intellectual property laws should pay a penalty for it. However, I do not believe that penalty should be exorbitant or a cruel and unusual punishment. Let's put it that way. And there's a lot of issues with this. Because the RIAA is misrepresenting some people, as I brought up the topic of network records up in Canada in the last episode. They're misrepresenting that record label for sure, because the record label has said so. So, it's a really knotted up piece of yarn that needs to be straightened out before you'll be able to, you know, understand everything that's going on here. And I hate to say this, but the RIAA is counting on that. So, yeah, a couple other schools are involved in this kind of thing. Let's see here. University of Wisconsin has refused to pass along settlement offers because the RIAA asked the schools to contact the students directly to do settlement offers. And at least the University of Wisconsin, go Badgers, has denied them that kind of access. But other schools have said, oh, yeah, sure. Ohio University has completely banned peer-to-peer traffic from its network, while Stanford is charging students hefty reconnection fees if the school is served with a DMCA takedown notice. We should probably talk about DMCA takedown notices. Okay, first of all, DMCA stands for Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It is probably the worst thing that ever got pushed through Congress because it stomped all over the fair use rights of the average citizen. You can get into that at another time, but basically a DMCA takedown notice is an insurance policy for an internet service provider, which in these cases would be the college or university that the student is attending. Basically, what the law says is if a party serves you with a DMCA takedown request, that if you pass that along, I believe it's within 24 hours to the user, then you're covered. You can't be sued by the party that says that their stuff was being infringed. This is what's known as safe harbor. So that's why these DMCA notices get passed along. Now, unfortunately, a lot of corporations, internet service providers, and the like don't even bother to let you take the infringing content down. they'll say, oh, well, we'll take it one step further and just take it down ourselves. The problem being is that some DMCA requests, DMCA takedown requests, have been filed falsely. That's illegal, by the way. You can't file a DMCA takedown notice for something that doesn't belong to you. And this has happened not just with the average Joe, but there have been some larger television networks that have said to YouTube and whatnot, oh, this belonged to us, you need to take it down, and it didn't belong to them in the first place. And then when it came back to YouTube saying, hey, you don't own the rights to this content, there was denial on the part of the network. Oh, well, we never sent you anything, blah, blah, blah. All of these emails just disappeared. So there's a lot of room for abuse of the DMCA, and it happens a lot. So that's why there's a problem with the DMCA. That's what the DMCA is, and that's basically what a DMCA takedown notice accomplishes. The RIAA has also sued at least 28 Duke University students. So they're going after college kids now. And you know why? Because college kids are going to get scared. College kids aren't going to say, maybe I should hire a lawyer. Maybe I should fight this. College kids are going to say, $3,000 compared to time in court, me being out of class, and me possibly losing a lot of money. Take the money and run, RIAA. That's why they're doing this. It's really underhanded. And you can't just look at what a society is doing or what an association is doing. You have to ask yourself, why are they doing it? And if the reasons they give don't line up with the practices that they are clearly showing in public, then it's time to call them out and challenge them on what they're saying. So things are not looking too good for folks on college and university campuses who are using their high-speed internet access service to share files. I think one exception to that would be All Peers, because All Peers is closed, and so the RIAA and AAL has no way to track what's going on there. But as far as torrents, Nutella, Kazaa, all that stuff, you could find yourself in a bad situation. Not that it's right, not that what you did was morally wrong. Just because, here's the thing, just because something is illegal or because you lose a lawsuit doesn't mean it was morally wrong. I mean, if you believe that something is morally wrong simply because the law says so, what do you say about slavery? Slavery was legal for quite some time, but we all know that slavery was morally wrong. So, just to give you an example of something that is absolutely morally wrong, yet was legal for some time, there you go. Okay? So, I think I justified the argument. All right, moving on. This is actually a positive thing. For those of you who are into Bon Jovi, I know I am. Both Jersey boys. I grew up in New Jersey, and he grew up a little bit south of me, and obviously he's older than I am. But anyway, good old Jersey kids. For you Bon Jovi fans who buy the iTunes version of the band's latest album, you'll have the first opportunity to buy concert tickets. I think this is a really good idea for three reasons. It promotes the album. It promotes the album in digital form on a trusted platform being iTunes. And it also promotes the concert. So the record company wins because, let's face it, they get the money from record sales. The artists see very little of that. The artist wins because suddenly they have a lot of fans coming to concerts. And digital media wins because it's not the folks that are buying the CD that get the early access to tickets. It's the folks that are buying the album on iTunes. Somebody smart came up with this. And it reminds me of what Trent Reznor did when he released his new album, letting little bits and pieces of it here and there. Smart, 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 smart. This is the kind of marketing that needs to happen with music. It is using the content as a means of something else. In this case, they're still paying for the content. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were big artists that start to give away their music for free, like Trent Reznor did, and let it be remixed in order to promote the sales of their album and also their concerts that will be coming up. It just, it's absolutely fundamental to the success of the music industry that this kind of thing happen. So there, I said it. And speaking of new business models in the music industry, have you been made aware of Magnatune yet? It's Magnatune.com, Magnatune.com. It was started by John Buckman. Well, Matt, what's different about Magnatune? Well, a couple things. Number one, they let you decide how much you want to pay for an album starting at $5. Number two, if you're a podcaster, you can use the music without paying for it at all and download it in MP3 format. In fact, the music for this program comes from Magnatune, from an artist called Joram. J-O-R-A-M. So if you like the music, if you think his album might be interesting, head on over to Magnatune. You can listen to the entire album for free. Then if you like it, you can say, oh, you know what? That was really good. I want to pay X amount of dollars for it. Now, the base cost is $5, but you can also order a CD from Magnatune. So you've got, like, multiple options, multiple price points. So basically, the best stuff rises to the top. If, you know, if one artist is better than the other, Magnatune's counting on the listener to say, you know what, I really like this. I want to give this guy the money. And the majority of the money from that album sale goes to the artist, not some label promoting him. And really, what Magnatune is a new record label, when you think about it. So it's a pretty cool thing. You should definitely check it out. Go to Magnatune, listen to some of the stuff. I actually found them through the creativecommons.org site, but very cool idea. They really have a wide variety of music, and depending on how things go, this may be the way that I release my future music with the band that I perform with, because I really don't want to go the route of RIAA. I don't like the way they treat their customers. I'm actually trying to line up an interview with someone from Magnatune. Apparently, they're very open about that, so hopefully I can line that up. I mean, I just have a million questions for these folks. You know, is this financially viable? How did you start? Did you get a lot of heat from the industry? That kind of thing. So if that happens, it will definitely be on the show, and I will let you know about it for sure. Okay, finally, listener questions. We actually have a question from Dan. He says, good first episode. Thank you, Dan. I do have a question. When is the RIAA going to embrace new media? Any thoughts? Just a few. Really, if you're looking at the RIAA as they are right now, there's no question about it. They are absolutely opposed to new media. During my undergrad years, I had a friend, and like most, I think, college guys do, we played a lot of Risk and a lot of those kind of strategy games. And he was the greatest tactician I have ever met. He could really whoop on anybody in any kind of game that required strategy and planning, Axis and Allies, Risk, Monopoly. Although Monopoly had dealing in it, so you know, whatever. But that kind of thing, he could really, really clean up on. And in fact, he now works as a security officer somewhere. His dad was in the Navy, and they used to play these games all the time. Like I said, greatest tactician I ever knew. Eventually, I got fed up with him beating me all the time, and I said, Matt, what do I need to do to start winning? And he said this to me. He said, if your next move is dictated by what your opponent did in his last move, you're already in trouble. Now, why do I bring up this story? Well, because the RIAA has been fighting a war that was lost a long time ago. Everything the RIAA, MPAA, IFPI have done up to this point has been reactionary. They reacted to P2P. They reacted to BitTorrent. They reacted to college campuses. That's not a winning strategy. And so, one of two things will happen. They will be forced into accepting new media by economic loss, or they will fold. EMI. Look at EMI. Now, EMI was the first major label of the Big Four to say, we're going to release music that is free of DRM. Because of that, EMI may survive while the others fold. Because even if you say, well, Matt, the timetable is so close, you know, what if the other labels do it right now? It's still going to stick in people's minds that EMI was the first. And they're going to say EMI has goodwill towards their consumers. They obviously realized we didn't like this. I will support them. As far as the other labels concerned, it was an act of desperation. And I hate to say it, but I don't think the RIAA is going to accept new media until it's an act of desperation, and by then it may be too late. So, I hate to be a nihilist on this kind of stuff, but I really don't see how they can change what they've been doing. They are so locked into it, I really don't think they're going to accept new media, and they're going to suffer for it. So, Dan, I hope that answers your question. Thank you very much for the question. Of course, if you have any questions, you can always send them to sonarcast@gmail.com. I will do my best to answer them. And if you have any comments as well or stories that you've seen that you'd like to have me talk about, I would be more than happy to do that. And that's going to do it for this episode of SonarCast. Thanks for spending the time with me. I hope you enjoyed yourself and you come back next week. Until I see you then, keep your ear to the ground.